Realization Congress, Lecture 5, Title, Scientology Definitions, 3. A Congress edition of a lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard to students on the St. Hill Special Briefing Course. Copyright 1967 by L. Ron Hubbard, all world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by HCO Tape Section, St. Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
Well, let's get on with some definitions and so forth. I would like to make a comment. Hubbard Association of Scientologists International, since 1952, the very formation of Scientology was a religious fellowship. That's one of the first and earliest lines in its charter from the state of Arizona. The parent organization is the Church of Scientology of California, operating throughout organizations throughout the Commonwealth. Very good. What is Scientology? How does it fit into the framework of man? Truth of the matter is you are studying an extension of the work of Gautama Siddhartha, begun about 2,500 years ago. He sought to end the endless cycle of birth and death and birth. And this death-birth cycle led into an effort to show men that they were a spirit and did not have to be a body and did not have to go on being clay. Gautama Siddhartha perfected some work that we did in 1952, and we did it better. How to exteriorize. Now, the trouble he had with his work was how to stably exteriorize or continue somebody in an exterior condition. He did not know how to do this. Actually, Lamaism, which began in Tibet after Gautama Siddhartha was no longer around. He, in actual fact, went to Tibet and worked in Tibet and developed what is called Lamaism in an effort to produce a methodology to reach the basis of the mind and permit an individual to be spiritually free. Now, that work, too, was relatively unsuccessful. We were more successful in that in 1952. In Scientology, we could more easily and more swiftly exteriorize an individual and show him that he was a human spirit than had been done. Yet the work of Gautama Siddhartha, although looked upon him as a failure, produced the sufficiency of wisdom on this planet to bring civilization to three-quarters of Asia. Buddhism is the oldest and most numerous religion on this planet at this moment. It is very numerous, and it predates Christianity by 500 years. Probably the shreds of Buddhism coming into the Middle East with the silk and spice merchants who, after the contact of Alexander in about 333 BC, found out there was a Europe. The spice merchants and silk merchants of India and China followed on back on the trail of his retreating conquest and made a trade contact with the with Europe. And from there on supplied Europe with spices and silks and so on an overland route. Well, along with them undoubtedly came Buddhism. It sparked a religious revival and a considerable amount of messianic activity in the Middle East. Now, regardless of any truths or prophecies or prophets or anything like that that happened as independent endeavors, this nevertheless was sparked off by Buddhism. Buddha predicted that in 2,500 years, the entire job would be finished in the West. That's in the Pali canons. Well, we finished it. Now, were somebody to claim that Scientology were not a religion was a disguise, this would be about the most erroneous statement that a man could make, because it is an extension, a direct extension of the work of Gautama Siddhartha Buddha. It has very many peculiar facets. Buddha never pretended to be other than just a man. Everyone, anyone, race, color, or creed could be a member of the Buddhist church. It was not limited to one caste or class or race or nationality. It was the first international religious movement. And it has carried forward, but it has moved actually in its technology not one inch further than it was pushed in Tibet. Until 1952, the successful exteriorization of human beings by a very brief, swift technology. Now, human beings do not stay exterior. You can demonstrate to them that they are a spiritual being, and that in essence is the essence of religion. Man is a spiritual being. Now, where he came from and so forth are questions developed in religion. But the spirituality of man is the basis of religion, and is the one thing that all religions have in common. They have different creators, different gods, different altars of worship, but in one thing they hold a common truth, and that is that man is a spiritual being. Only in Buddhism was this ever proven. Now, I'm going to take up these definitions. All right, the first word here is inversion. Now, inversion simply means it should go one way and it goes the other. Basically, it inverts. It collapses in on itself downward. Now, when you take an inversion, when a person is introverted, why, he would look in on himself, you see. So you get an inversion. This means it's going south of zero. Or it's a reverse scale. Now, this also is used in terms of inversion. This scale is going plus, while this scale goes minus. You follow? As one factor progresses, the other factor degresses. You follow? So when we say it's an inversion on something, it means actually it's a go downward about it. So that 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5, that would be a plus scale, you see. But a 4 and a 3 and a 2 backwards would be the inversion scale. Do you understand? It's a reversion of what it is. There are undoubtedly other meanings and connotations to this particular word, but that in essence covers what they are. It means it goes backwards. All right, exteriorization. This was an action which I have, by the way, just described to you as the history of Buddhism. It simply means a thetan walks out of his body, moves out of his body, or exists out of his body. But in actual fact, exteriorization would mean the action of moving out of a body. I've actually been talking vis-a-vis to an insane person and banged them out of their head. This is back in research times. And had them all of a sudden talk to me totally rationally. And just perfect. Could have passed anything. Any board, discussed their problems and what they were into. Didn't last. When I get up to leave, they go back into their head again and start gibbering. But exteriorization is not a symptom of insanity. Quite the reverse. People who are interiorized, that means something else. It isn't the reverse of this. An interiorization means going into it too fixedly and becoming part of it too fixedly. It doesn't mean just going into your head. You could interiorize into work, by which one would get so fixated and so surrounded by his work that he never got out of it. So you could interiorize into most anything, but exteriorization is relegated in our terminology simply to an exteriorization or a moving out of the body by the spirit. Re-stimulate. Well, re-stimulation, that means the reactivation of an existing incident. You re-stimulate it, you reactivate it. Some approximation of the original incident causes it to go into play, and you get a point where it was re-stimulated. Now, a fellow, here's an example, a fellow is out here, and he gets run into by a truck, and he has then an engram, a picture of mental pain, a mental image picture of pain and unconsciousness, and he has this, and it's just got a truck in it, and it's associated with the truck, and so forth. Now, there's the engram, and a few days later, he walks by a similar kind of truck, and he feels afraid and upset, and he doesn't know why. Now, what he has done is re-stimulate the incident of being hit by the truck. It remains unseen to him, and the re-stimulation is usually unknown to a person. If it were known to the person, he would immediately recover from it. But if it remains unknown, why, it tends to be buried and have an effect upon the individual. Re-stimulate. This is very, very, very interesting, because by picking up re-stimulations, you can knock out of action an engram without running it. It's sort of as if the engram sat over in locker A, undisturbed and not troubling the individual. But one day he passes by a truck, and this engram comes out of locker A and drops in his lap, and he doesn't know what it is, and he becomes the effect of it. Now, if you picked up the moment it went into re-stimulation, not the original engram, if you picked up the moment of its re-stimulation, it would drop back into locker A and cease to trouble the individual. It is upon this fact that the whole subject of releasing depends. You're dropping the bank back into locker A. It isn't really troubling somebody. The erasure that occurs is the erasure of points of re-stimulation. Now, re-stimulate has an opposite word, de-stimulate, which means to take away the re-stimulation. Now, de-stimulate does not mean the erasure of the original incident. It means simply the knockout of the point of re-stimulation. Got it? Now we have GE, genetic entity. Now, what is a genetic entity? Theoretically, this is the world and science of psychology, which has to do with the field of biology and so forth. It's the science of cells, psychology. And psychology conceives that there is an unending stream of protoplasm passing through time, which has branch tracks known as bodies. And that is the basic theory of cytology. It is not a well-constructed science because it does not follow thoroughly its basic theory. So that the body which you have is supposed, in the field of cytology, to have originated at some dim point in the past from a sea of ammonia or something, and in earlier times in pagan worship and that sort of thing, from full-armed from the brain of Jove or something like this. And then by the process of reproduction, keeps passing itself through time over and over and over and over, so that this gives your unending stream of protoplasm. Now, obviously, if that were the case, then if an unending, supposing man were not a spiritual being, or if he were, somewhere along the line, there must be some kind of a pattern arranged for a body. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to make a body. Quite obvious. If you have no blueprint in the planning room for a ship, it's highly unlikely that anyone would build a ship. Do you see? They haven't got any blueprints for a ship, so they don't build a ship. If they knocked one together, it'd be pretty slipshod. But the body is a pretty complete entity. Now, back in the days of Dianetics, and this is a Dianetic term, when the Thetan had not been particularly regarded as part of it. The only way we could account for past lives, and a good way to account for them now, somebody wondering about what they are, but not correct, would be to say, well, they are incidents which happened on the genetic line. Now, the Darwin theory is in actual fact, although Darwin did not know it, an explanation of this unending stream of protoplasm. Now, he studied the evolution of bodies. Now, I assure you, if there was no unending stream of protoplasm making bodies, one after the other, up through time, there would have been nothing to have evolved, right? So if the Darwinian theory was correct, then someplace there must have been a blueprint. And someplace there must have been adventures, which were recorded as experience, which then modified the blueprint of that body. Do you follow the logic that's involved here? Well, that was what a genetic entity is. Now, when we find, however, the theory of evolution does not in actual fact hold good, for various reasons, when we find out that man is a spiritual being, and a lot of other factors surround it, the genetic entity ceases to be very important. We have the actual explanation of what a past life amounts to, and we don't have to blame it on the genetic entity. But theoretically, you would be able to find the blueprint if you looked in the body and you went backtrack. Obviously, the body must have a time recording of some kind or another. That matter of fact, we used to think it showed up on the E-meter, but it never has. Only you have. I've just described what general blueprint that it would be. The where do you put the ears, you know? Well, the first overt would be the first overt on a chain of overts. And if you were trying to get a fellow over an impulse to hit every girl he saw, which I should think would be a rather healthy thing to get somebody over. He complains to you that he wants to hit every girl, and you don't handle these impulses and obsessions and so forth. Any time you process one and so on, you generally go a cropper, but I'll show you how you go about it. He has this impulse to hit girls. So what you would do would be to trace back all the times he wanted to hit girls, and you would find him back at his first overt on the chain on the subject of hitting girls. And at that moment, when he saw that, why, it would release, and he theoretically would not have any more impulse to hit girls. I say theoretically for the reason that the ability to sort out through the 100,000 other impulses which he also has and choose this one selectively and alone as the auditor or preclear's particular hidden standard. Have I gotten over hitting girls yet? Is fraught with many adventures, and they're all bad ones. You should not try to process a specific type of aberration. If we processed a specific type of aberration, we of course would be in the field of mental healing and so forth, but long ago we actually discovered that we must not process specific aberrations, which takes us out of the field of mental healing. It is quite fatal to do this, because in the first place, an evaluation for the case. In the second place, it's a negative type process. You're condemning the individual for hitting girls. Doesn't validate the individual at all. Do you follow? And if carried on very long, does not result in the betterment of an individual. All we're interested in is the spiritual betterment of the individual, and you don't achieve that by finding these little bits and pieces, nasty habits, and throwing bottles and things like that, by selectively picking those up and processing. Now, if any auditor were to go along this line, he would soon learn the truth of what I am saying. And when you try to process the specific aberrations of a human being, you are now going to take on an endless task which probably won't resolve. So therefore, not only are we not in the field of mental healing, you see, that would be mental healing. He has an impulse that should be healed, so you process him on something to heal that impulse. Do you understand? Well, completely aside from not being in the field of mental healing if any claim is made for it, of any kind whatsoever, would be the biggest fraud of the centuries. If I can tell you by experience that the percentiles of successes when specific aberrations are directly addressed by the practitioner is too low to be considered. Not successful. Because that isn't what's right with the person. You have to validate what's right with the person. It's an entirely different field, do you follow? You don't have to find out what's wrong with a person, for instance, in modern processing to make them right. You don't. You know what can go wrong with human beings or what he's having trouble with anyway, but they are not things that need healing. There are no wounds present. The individual simply isn't talking very much, and he isn't communicating very much, and he can't reach very much, and so you bring him up into communication level, and the individual can't handle his problems because he can't recognize what they are, and you bring him up there, and then you find out that he's been resolving his problems by committing a Wolpertz, and you get him over doing this, and then you find out he's very ARC broke with life, and life is very cruel to him, and you get him over his ARC breaks, and so forth, and then you bring him up to a point where you find out that he has a good solution. He's got a marvelous solution for everything. And any time he has a bad break, he goes and lies down and is a horse or something. I don't know. But we're not interested in what his solution is, and we're not treating him for that reason. Now we move up into the higher grades and so on. And all of these things are simply increasing the abilities of a spirit, not healing what's wrong with it. And here's one, OT activities. What are OT activities? OT activities would be those programs conducted by OTs to assist Scientology. Simple? And here's one. This has to do with old anchor points and so forth. It's the gold balls. A body is constructed in a space framework, and you can actually see these things. And actually, as you look around, some people can perceive these. And when an individual has dark hollows under his eyes, it's all these little gold balls all grouped together underneath the eyes have caved in and gone black, and that gives him... It's very interesting. If you could, in actual fact, shift this golden ball framework of the body and so forth, you could probably bend the joints in the wrong places and that sort of thing. It's quite remarkable. Every once in a while, somebody's face is out of shape or something, and you get him to pick up the ball and put it back where it belonged, or put a bunch of balls out there to remedy his havingness of that particular ball. And this is anchor point processing way back when. All of a sudden, the ball, instead of lying against his face, goes back where it belongs, and he reasserts his sense of balance, and so on. His face will actually change shape. It's quite remarkable. What this has to do with the structure of bodies, what is the space in which the body is formed? What is that space? The space, of course, the body has to be held in certain rigid form in space. Apparently the system which is used in mocking up bodies, or one of the systems used, is to put gold balls out here, balanced left and right and back and around and so forth. I wouldn't look for them if I were you. It's rather fraught with disaster in some cases. First and second postulate, I think this had to do, and probably there's better and work that I'm going to give you right now on this subject, because this is a first postulate situation, and the second postulate situation is, what is the first postulate made on any existing situation? Now, if you get the first postulate made on any existing situation, you can actually ignore the second postulate that's made on the situation. That's the general thing. Now, actually, one tried to make an end-all out of this back about 52 and so on. What was the first postulate on the track? What's the first postulate that one ever made? And so forth. Now we now find out it's not necessary to have that. And we have energy. Energy would simply mean a potential of motion or power. And energy is normally conceived of in modern physics as being made up of small waves which are flowing from point A to B, or potentially can flow from point A to B, and there's a lot of explanations in modern physics, but we know they still haven't got an efficient engine, so they probably haven't got the right definition of energy either. But energy would be a potential. It would be the force or flow, or the potential force or flow from something to something, or the ability to accomplish work, or the ability to make motion or movement, and so on. I'm giving you all the possible things. You, in actual fact, know that when something moves from A to B, we're taught in physics that if something moves from A to B, then there is some energy necessary to move it, and probably some energy developed in the movement of it. When you move something, you develop energy. When you move something, you also need energy to move it. We are taught this very carefully. It is highly doubtful. Well, look. If somebody knows all about something, he can do some remarkable things with it, can't he? And you don't need to fill an Empire State Building full of fuel at a cost of $100 million and touch a fire to it and send it into space to burn for a few seconds to land a half-ton capsule out into orbit if you knew the whole system of energy. Because I assure you that they someday will find that this is not that energy-consuming a process, and that that's not quite that necessary to carry out that vast expense of the public purse. I think if they'd worked in the field of pure mathematics for a long time before they started buying all those Empire State Buildings full of liquid gases, they might have saved the taxpayers some money. But that was not the point, was it? What is energy? This is an actual fact, is something that is above modern physics considerably, but they can define it, and I've given you a working definition. It's potential or actual motion or force. Potential or actual motion or force. Sloppy definition. I know certain fellows who would call me down for saying so, but there it is. Flow. That means the progress of particles or impulses or waves from point A to point B, or point C to point D, or in any direction, but rather outlaws the idea of a dispersal. Something that splatters all over the place is not a flow. Flow has the connotation of being somewhat directional. So that if something is flowing down off a mountain, it could be flowing awfully wide and on a considerable front, which could be widening, and at some point that would cease to be a flow and become a flood or something. Flow is looked upon as something moving from A to B, and once more we get back to what is energy. Well, energy is a particle or in progress, or energy is a motion or a wave vibration or a bunch of other things. But it would be flowing in some direction. And when we say Joe talks to Bill, then Joe is flowing words and impulses toward Bill. And when Bill talks to Joe, why, he's flowing impulses or words back to Joe. And it has a connotation of a limited and directional progress of particles or wave motions through space. Thought. Well, that is a very wide subject. That is a very, very wide subject indeed. What is thought? Now, every philosopher since the beginning of time has tried to answer this question of what is thought. And they have gone from the idiotic to the stupid and back again many times on this particular subject.
because if they had understood what thought was, why then they wouldn't have confused it with life and they wouldn't have confused it with the spirit.
Modern psychology confuses thought with life. It says where thought occurs, there is life. So therefore, a computer is alive. That's one of the first mistakes you can make. In fact, they sort of tend in that direction. Thought would simply be a spaceless, positionless product of a thetan containing meaning. That's all. It's something a thetan produces. It doesn't have space or energy or location or so forth. It is a thought. And we can say what it is not. It is not life. And we can also say that a thought is not a spirit. They are different. The mistake is originally in the word theta. The Greek said that the word theta, if I remember rightly, stood for life or thought. Stood for either one. Well, actually, for us, it stands only for a thetan. Even life has a connotation. Life is something that is being lived, and do you know a thetan has a perfect choice not to live it? Now, lambda, I have forgotten what that symbol was, but it occurs in the axioms and so on, and I think it is light in the axioms, but I won't go down on record with regard to it. It's an unused symbol. There's phi for the physical universe, and then I think there was lambda for life. I've forgotten what it is. And not isness, these are contained in the axioms, and nothing is better expressed than those axioms. Not isness implies that the thing is, but is being knotted. You couldn't not is something that wasn't in the first place. Do you see? Here's an e-meter. I can not is the e-meter. I can say it isn't there. I can actually push beams against it and say it doesn't exist and so forth. It's actually an assertion against fact. Now, counter-emotion would be the emotion which greets the emotion. You have point A exerting an emotion. An emotion is normally something which has flow and quite normally has a wavelength and has meaning and concept all mixed up with it and so on. It's quite a packaged affair, emotion is. And it would be the counter-emotion to any emotion. Well, now, any emotion could counter any emotion. Love can counter anger and hate can counter boredom and so forth. It's just any emotion that is countering an existing emotion. When you start to take apart the energy in a bank on the subject of a fight, let us say, you could actually, and don't have to, but you could actually pick out of it. The fellow is raving, and you could pick out his heavy antagonism, you see, and you could differentiate that with a victim's total apathy. And the counter-emotion to the antagonism is apathy. It's the emotion which is used to meet a situation or which does meet it. Quite an interesting study, by the way. It is a study which is even reached into the field of politics and control of human beings. The advertising world also, and so on. They're very interested in this subject. They want to know what emotion people will counter emotions with. Hitler, for instance, raving and screaming and so forth, was actually greeted by the Germans with enthusiasm. You remember? You ever hear that raving, screaming voice? You probably heard it. And the waves of Heil going on in the background. Everybody going to town on the subject. In other words, the counter-emotion to hate and rage in that particular case was enthusiasm. So if you just knew this much about it, why, you probably would make a very, very, very
successful advertising executive if you merely knew that one emotion gave another emotion, and if you studied what emotion you had to produce in order to get another emotion, and that other emotion is supposed to be desirable, or are supposed to be something of the sort, why, you would make quite an advertising executive. Of course, what emotion produces want? Well, the funny part of it is, want isn't an emotion. See, that is a desire, or a postulate, or a pull-in, or something of the sort. Now, wanting something because you like it, the like it is the emotion. But it doesn't have to be there at all. People very often want things that they neither like nor hate nor feel emotional about in any way, shape, or form. So you see, the advertising executive, when he's trying to handle emotion and counter-emotion, is rather going up against it, because what he's trying to bring about is to get the people to want something. He's dealing with want and not want. And he's trying to generate want on certain subjects and not want on competitors' products. And when he tries to handle these things emotionally, why, he starts laying an egg. You'll see in beer ads, they handle this very directly without emotion in beer ads and so forth. They know that fellows love beautiful girls, see, or like beautiful girls. So I think it was Rheingold Beer was the one that started this, and they never had beer associated with anything in any of their ads with beautiful girls. So the people would look at the beautiful girl and immediately want Rheingold Beer, which I think the guy must have been bats. Makes no sense at all.